I would like to welcome everyone to the meeting, and hopefully everyone can hear me clearly. Can I ask for everyone's full cooperation and to adhere to the current guidelines with regards to the conduct of this committee meeting? Everyone should ensure their mobile telephones are turned off or switched to silent, and the use of mobile devices for recording are not permitted. Members of the public should not speak during the meeting and may be temporarily excluded for discussion of in-committee items. Members of the public and press must refrain from using the instant messaging facility during the meeting, and anyone found to be doing so will be given a warning. Failing to adhere to the guidelines for a second time will result in being removed from the meeting. I would remind members of their obligations under the Councillor's Code of Conduct to declare any financial or significant non-financial interests which they have in any item of business before the committee today. If you have any such interest, please either declare it now or immediately before the item itself, stating the item of business that it relates to. Having declared an interest, members should leave the meeting by hanging up from the call for the duration of the discussion on that item and should not take part in the vote. You will then be invited back to join the meeting once the discussion on that item is ended. The proceedings of the meeting will be audio and video recorded, except where the Council is considering any exempt matters. The recording equipment is linked to the microphone system on the computer, so please ensure that your microphone is switched on before speaking. Members are reminded that they are personally responsible for any comments they make at the meeting. And please ensure, if you wish to speak on an item, for those at home, use the instant messaging facility to indicate your wish to speak, and I will bring members in as listed. Members should ensure that their cameras are switched on when speaking. Cameras should also be switched on when a vote is being taken. I would remind members to keep their instant messages to the following letters. Type Q if you wish to ask a question.
Okay, so the new system, you just press the button on the right-hand side to speak. The first person will light up red. If there's two or more people looking to speak, then the second person should light up, it should go a flashing green, and anybody else in the queue after that will be a solid green. Once the first person has finished speaking, then the person who was flashing green will come in next. So it's the same system as we use in the Downshire at the minute. Just because we are hybrid and there are people at home, if everybody, even in the chamber, as well as those at home, if you want to ask a question or propose a second, still use the chat facility, just so that we know we're keeping people in the right order.
Thanks very much, sir, and I hope that's helpful to members present. Just a couple of wee chairman's remarks I'd like to make. First of all, I would like to congratulate Sinfield, who finished third in the large village category on 2023 Ulster and Bloom, and I'd like to say to Sinfield and to the committee that put a lot of hard work in there, especially the volunteers. It was a brilliant result and well done. And I say also, Mrs. Elizabeth Wilson of Killalea, she'll be 100 years of age on Saturday, so I'd like to wish her this stage a happy birthday. So if you could pass that on to the chair, sir, to Elizabeth Wilson. I've got apologies in from Councillor Savage, McGuinness and Kearns. So that's the apologies so far. So on it.
Sorry, Chair, there's an apology from Councillor McAvoy as well.
Councillor McAvoy as well. Thank you very much for that, Sarah. So we now move on to agenda item number two, declarations of conflicts of interest. Are there any in that category? No. And since it's non-declared, we'll proceed now to agenda item number three, is the action sheets from our last meeting in September. So,
sorry, Chair, if I can just come in on the action sheet. We've actually amalgamated the historic action sheets to the one from September as well. So there's a number of actions, obviously, historical actions that will be coming off that action sheet. So it shouldn't be as long next time.
No problem, sir. Thank you very much for that. And we'll proceed on with the page on our papers. We'll go to page 24, and that will be the action sheets from our September meeting. So we'll go to page 1, page 2, page 3, page 4, and page 5. I remember it's happy enough that the record of the last meeting, and could I have a proposer and seconder? If you type into the chat, please, proposer and seconder. Proposed by Councillor Derry Finn and seconded by I'm seconded by Councillor Truesdale from online. Thank you very much, Jill. Are there any matters arising from the action sheet of our last meeting? No, members are happy enough then. Thank you very much. And we now move on to agenda item number 4. And agenda item number 4 is a notice of motion in relation to clean indoor air. It was submitted by Councillor Truesdale. So I'm going to hand over to yourself, Councillor Truesdale, to introduce the motion and then speak on it. I think that's right with procedure.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, thank you, Andrew, for pulling the information together for the committee. Before I start explaining the parts of the motion, I want to highlight that most people spend 90% of their time indoors and 90% of their time breathing indoor air. Outdoor air becomes indoor air. It's simple and obvious, and we should all be doing all we can to ensure the air inside our buildings is as clean as possible. I want to be really clear on this. This motion is bigger than COVID. It's about indoor clean air and, more importantly for me, integration. COVID was a precursor of what science is very clear about. This will not be our last rodeo on a pandemic, and we cannot afford to bury our heads in the sand. Without giving people information on what we are doing to try and promote indoor clean air in council properties, we are restricting people who cannot take part in activities that happen to be in those properties, such as people who have underlying conditions, the clinically vulnerable and the immunosuppressed. A healthy learning and working environment can improve performance by reducing absence rates, and that goes for tackling any virus, such as flu or RSV. Reduced absence rate in schools and places of work assists the economy and limits lost productivity. Scientists and engineers all over the world are now looking at clean air as one important method of keeping people safe and well. I'd like to address the points under 2.2 on the paper, if that's okay, which Andrew has made. Point one, I take on board the point about Monaghan Row, and perhaps we could have an outline of the ventilation ideas that are planned for the new Civic Centre. As Professor Catherine Noakes, the mechanical engineer with a specialism in the transportation of airborne pathogens, says, you don't need an expensive ventilation system in every building. Point four, as the COVID pledge was drawn up by a coalition of trade unions, consultation of employees through trade unions is a natural next step, because we're already hearing absolute horror stories of employers banning testing and forcing people to come into work still with a heavy viral load. We do not want the legacy of COVID to be a rollback on workers' safety or rights. So this safety pledge allows employers to stand by their workers, ensuring levels of protection against infection are taken, in addition to supporting staff and visitor well-being whilst on their premises. And point five about cost. Is it possible for an evaluation of the Downshire site to fall in under the expenditure of the evaluation for the new Civic Centre with regards to clean air? So there are three parts to the motion. Firstly, the COVID pledge has been signed by local authorities in England, the Pharmacists Defence Association, Scottish Trade Union and Belfast City Council. I don't believe it asks us to do anything controversial. It protects staff, which ensures continuity of service to the ratepayer. Secondly, by reporting on what we've done in council properties, we've the chance to highlight the steps that we have taken to ensure there is a space where residents and visitors, etc., can come and be comfortable because they're informed on air quality in relevant places. For example, just a very quick example, there's one particular coffee shop in Newcastle who invested in a HEPA filter, which was around £200, when businesses reopened after lockdown. They're thriving, they haven't lost any staff, and absence is non-existent. People feel more comfortable being there. The council needs to lead in this area, not follow behind. They need to be clear about what's being done, because, for example, we use water quality monitors for our beaches, and air quality monitors work in exactly the same way. So third, using council expertise and experience, we can provide advice for the promotion of clean indoor air at events supported by council. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Councillor Truesdale. I see Councillor Rice as we comment in the chat. So, Councillor Rice, Michael, thank you.
Is that on, is it? Yeah, thanks, Chair. We recognise the merits of such a proposal, but I think maybe, I know Councillor Truesdale sort of alluded to it there, maybe if we look at a cost evaluation for such an implementation, because before we commit to a decision on this motion, maybe it's something we look at, because I know she mentioned the new downshire facility, but I imagine it's probably this motion's looking for nearly all council facilities, so I feel like we should maybe try and get a cost evaluation before we commit to anything. Thank you, Chair.
No problem, Councillor Rice. Thank you very much. Councillor Enright is in the second motion and also has a comment. I know at this juncture, Cadogan, you're replacing Councillor Kelly on this committee, and I welcome you to the committee, and thanks to Kiana for her contributions and her short time with us. So it's over to your good self. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I just want to make a technical contribution to this debate insofar as that by law in the United Kingdom, public sector buildings are required to be moving towards the nearly zero energy building code, and they have to be retrofitted as well. So say, for instance, if we had a second civic centre in Newry, it would have to be built to the nearly zero energy building code, which would require the use of, in addition to mains electricity, photovoltaics, heat pumps and air recirculation systems. Now, modern air recirculation systems under the NEDZ code automatically filter the air and give you the sort of results that Councillor Truman is talking about. We'll also have to retrofit our council buildings in order to fit with the nearly zero energy building code in the same way that public buildings in the Republic have been doing this last 2 years. And I'm sure you all know that the NEDZ code has already been in force in the Republic for the last 5 years. So that buildings built under that energy code, in addition to saving hundreds of thousands of pounds a year on energy, will also filter out the air and give you the sort of clean air that Jill Truman's talking about. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Councillor Henry, for your contribution. Councillor Henry Reilly in the chamber. Thanks, Henry.
Thanks, Chair. I'm just a bit concerned, Chairman, that people would want to use the COVID issue as a way to ductwork. And I used to study virology, and for to think that you can stop a virus making its way through the community is nonsense. And if you look at all the research that's been published since the end of the lockdowns, it's more or less universally agreed now that lockdown was a mistake, and that a lot of the measures that were being forced on communities, like wearing masks and whatever, were totally unnecessary. And indeed counterproductive. So if we were going to go down this road, we need to be extremely careful that it's not used as a ploy against employers, because Jill mentioned there about people being stopped or being forced to go into work even though they've a heavy viral load. You know, if you look at the statistics, more people died from the flu than died from COVID in an average year in the UK. So, you know, it seems to me that a lot of people made a lot of money out of the COVID issue. Certainly the big pharmaceutical companies did, and a lot of others when most, the 99.9% of the population could overcome the effects of the virus through their natural immunity. And I think that we need to be very careful if we're going to go down this road of using a virus that humanity has fought off since its inception, if we're going to use that as a method to try and exploit the place of employment or the workplaces. So I'm not entirely happy with the notice of motion at all. And I would be abstaining in any vote on it, Chairman.
Thank you very much for your contribution, Henry. And I see that Councillor David Taylor would like to contribute as well with a wee comment. Go ahead, David.
Yep, thanks, Chair. Chair, listen, in terms of the, the basis of the motion, I think it's obviously clear that it's very important that we have a duty of care to all our employees, or indeed anybody that uses any council facility. And it should be obviously a very important aim for us to have the best air quality in any of our buildings that we have within our possession. I think though that we are in a situation with the motion tonight that there is further work required. I certainly wouldn't want to be making a final decision on the full content of the motion, because there are, issues that we have to consider. First of all, whilst it does mention about, our two principal buildings, one of which actually isn't in within our ownership any longer, it does state that this does be ruled out in terms of all our buildings in due course. And we obviously have a significant property portfolio within our ownership, and that obviously has cost implications. And it's not just about cost, but it's something we have to consider about, if we were to implement something like this, we need to see a full evaluation of what something like this does cost. But there are other ways in which we can look at how we can improve our quality in buildings, and there is a job of work to do in that regard as well. And there may be some, the COVID safety pledge, I suppose that's something we need to look at in more detail as well, about how that impacts on us as an organisation. And if there are concerns, on that from some members that have been outlined, how those concerns can be addressed. So, I certainly feel, we can look at the basis of the motion, but there is work to do on it before I think anybody would be very confident in signing off on it tonight. And I think, as a basis of moving forward, that's something that we should do in terms of, with the officials, and obviously in conjunction then, bring that back to our relevant committee here in due course and over the coming weeks and months. So I say I would probably be of the point of view of abstaining at this moment in time until there's a lot more work done on it as to see what the full implication of it is. But we do have a commitment, to say at the start of my comments, to look after the duty of care of all our employees and those that use our buildings. And anything we can do to improve that air quality as the basis of this motion is, we should try and commit ourselves to do that, but obviously there's work to do going forward.
Thank you very much, David, for that. And I see, Jill, you want to come back in again with a comment, and then Councillor Rice is the same, so I'll hand over to you, Councillor Truesdale.
Just very quickly to Councillor Riley, there's a lot there, and I think we need to do it maybe in a private conversation, but just to make the point that this is not about stopping a virus, it's about limiting a virus. Because 300 people a week are still dying from COVID in the United Kingdom. Councillor Taylor, Councillor Rice, this is no different to the human right to clean water. And the motion actually states, starting with the Downshire, I've already corrected the Monaghan Row one. This is just starting with the Downshire. It's not a rollout on all council properties by any means. We're dipping our toe into something that's new. Belfast City Council are already doing it. They're there with the knowledge. We could maybe link up with them, see how they do it. This is just about dipping the toe in. Thank you.
Thanks, Jill. Michael, Councillor Rice.
Sorry, Chair. No, my comment was more maybe towards an amendment that if we can get a fully costed idea as to what this is going to cost, and then take it back to committee, because right now we could be making a decision on something we don't actually know what we're
no budget
so if Councillor Truesdale is happy enough to accept that amendment.
Yeah, fair enough. Councillor Truesdale, Councillor Rice has made an amendment. Are you happy to accept the amendment?
Will the costings just be for the Downshire site?
No, Michael, if you just could you draft it, mention it, read in, or speak in to the meeting your proposed amendment?
The proposed amendment is for specifically the Downshire, or for the new civic building, and then what it would be for all buildings, because I assume if this is what we're looking at for one building, it's going to have to be across them all then,
Oh, yeah, could I have a seconder for your amendment? Councillor Willie Clark is seconded. If you just type it into the box, okay. And then at the same, I've got a comment from Councillor Derry Finn. Derry,
thank you.
Sorry.
You'll need to deal with that amendment first before we move on.
No problem. Well, then, as I say, an amendment has been tabled by Councillor Rice and seconded by Councillor Clark. And Is Councillor Treesdale happy to accept that amendment?
I'm not entirely sure. Is the amendment to ask for separate costs for each and every council property within the district, or is it just for Downshire and the new civic centre?
Go ahead, Michael. Thank you.
Just for then, for the officers to bring back a report as to how much it would cost for the new building and then all the other buildings as well, because as I said, I assume if we're going to do it for one, it's going to be looked at for all of them. So.
Yeah, so that's the proposed terms of the amendment, Councillor Treesdale. Are you happy to accept that?
I'm not sure, because it adds a considerable amount of work to Andrew Castles and his team. That's a lot of work to ask for. I would be content with just the Downshire and the new civic centre as a start, because as I said, we're just dipping our toe into this. I mean, to do every single council property in the district is a hefty piece of work.
You see, I think a lot of work has been done till on your motion already, and I know it's very, very important, and you've outlined the importance of the motion and your concerns about it, but I think myself, no, it is a very important thing to do, and I think myself, it needs to be done right, and we need to give our officers scope. You know, we need to give them direction as to what to go down. I know Councillor Rice has put an amendment to your motion, something similar in vain to what you're looking at yourself, but I'm just wondering, are you content to accept the amendment as it's read in?
Yes.
Well, thank you. Thanks very much, Councillor Treesdale. So we don't need to proceed to a vote. I think the motion that you've tabled has been accepted. But I have a couple of speakers here before I wrap up. Councillor Finn and then Councillor Enright.
I just wanted to say that obviously clean air is really important, and we have seen that with COVID. I suppose I have a question. In terms of the current public health guidelines, what the difference would be if we were to be implementing this clean indoor air policy comparatively to what public health, I would imagine, the council have already adopted to ensure that people are being kept safe within public buildings? I think that's the only thing, if maybe Councillor Treesdale could come back on that. I'm just slightly confused as to what we can build on, because I know obviously there was a huge amount of work done with COVID to make sure that all of our spaces were safe. I just wondered where the difference in that guidance and what clean indoor air is. If maybe you could speak to that, Jill, I would really appreciate it. But please to accept the amendment as well, because it is a big piece of work, and I think if we know about the expenditure that's going to go in on it, we can find ourselves in a better position on that. So thank you, Chair.
Thanks very much, Councillor Finn. And then I've Councillor Enright, and then I'll come back to you, Jill, in relation to Councillor Finn's question. Cadogan?
Yes, I'm just a bit concerned by the officer's report, which suggests that, for instance, in the new civic centre in Newry, that air filtration would somehow cost more. It's a requirement of the new building code in order to achieve the NebZeb building code, which all public sector buildings are supposed to follow. I mean, if we don't follow it, we'll end up with the same situation we ended up with in the Newry and Downpatrick leisure centres, where we ended up with a fuel bill of £800,000 a year that we actually didn't need to spend because we didn't follow the NebZeb building code. So, I mean, basically, if you follow the correct building code, you get air filtration, including virus filters, for free. Now, coming back to the Downshire estate, as far as I understand, there's already air filtration going on there. So, if you've already got air filtration, if you've already got air circulation going on in that building, then having virus filters on top of that shouldn't be a very difficult job at all. So I'm just thinking from a technical point of view, starting with those two buildings, Chair, it sounds like the officers could be making a mountain out of a molehill. Thank you.
Cadogan, I'm going to bring in our director, Andrew Castles. He'd like to respond to your comments. And then, Henry, thank you for being patient. I'll let you in after Andrew. Thanks. Go ahead, Andrew.
Chair, just to clarify, the report doesn't reference the new civic centre at all. I think it was Councillor Treesdale that brought that into the conversation. And clearly, yes, the new civic centre will be built as per the current building control regulations, etc. So actually quite difficult to assess a building that's going to be built to comply with regulations that isn't built yet. For buildings that are in existence, clearly there's a couple of issues in there. One is about none of the officers are saying that the air as we speak is not clean. But to prove that, it would be necessary, obviously, to sample it and show what the quality of the air is. And then on the back of that, if it requires any adjustments or any modifications to any ventilation systems, for example, then those would be the recommendations coming out of that report. But at this point in time, council is clearly not saying that any of our buildings are out with of any of the regulations in terms of clean air. And again, the new civic centre is not mentioned in the officer's report.
Thank you very much, Andrew. I'll hand over to Henry. He's been waiting patiently. Henry, go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to point out, Chairman, that Jill says 200 people dying every week of COVID. There's a massive difference in dying with COVID or of COVID, and nearly all those people are dying with COVID as part of an underlying illness. And that's the crux of the issue. If you want to protect people from viruses, and especially respiratory virus, you protect the very, very vulnerable. You put your resources into protecting the extremely vulnerable people and susceptible people, and let the rest of society work through it. That's the lesson that's been learned. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Henry. And with your contribution, that brings this section of our debate to a close. And thanks to all. So, Tristia, would you like to amend a reply, please, to sum up? Thank you very much. Sorry about that.
I'll just speak to Councillor Finn's comments, I think it was. And just very quickly before I do, Councillor Riley, it's actually 300, not 200. Councillor Finn, it provides an extra layer of protection. This is not just about COVID. It's about all viruses. It's about air pollution. It's the same as asking for clean water to come out of your tap. It's no different. Clean air, clean water, all those things keep productivity going and reduce staff absences, reduce illnesses, all of those things that clean water does as well. But thank you all very much. It's been a very interesting discussion and conversation. And yes, I brought the new Civic Centre into it because I realised that Monaghan Row is now closing and there will possibly be a new Civic Centre. That was me that did bring that in.
Dead on, Jill. Thank you very much for your motion. And again, I do agree. That's been a very interesting motion, a lot of contributions. And thanks to all you've contributed. Thanks very much.
Sorry, Chair, just to come back in on that, just to clarify, Monaghan Row isn't closing per se. It's obviously the council have sold Monaghan Row to the trust, and we are currently leasing it, and when the new civic centre is ready, we will withdraw from the lease and the trust will have the full use of Monaghan Row for the benefit of the citizens.
Thank you very much for that clarification, Andrew. So we move on to
Chairman. Sorry, very important point. Are the Alliance Party now accepting that the Civic Centre is a viable and much needed facility?
That's not on the agenda, Henry, but no, you've made your point. As I say, we'll move on to more important matters at the moment. We'll move on to Councillor Jackson's motion. And if Johnny, you've read that into the records at our September meeting. So I'm going to hand over to your good self. I know it at council level it was seconded by Councillor Hannah, so I'm happy enough to hand over to you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, look, this motion was just basically proposed because of a desire to see basic council services for our ratepayers be the best that they can be, and in that making sure that the service is as cost effective as possible for the ratepayer. And I'm sure every councillor in here tonight has had feedback from constituents with issues regarding bin collections. I know nearly all of our elected reps have had complaints every other day. So the feedback regarding that is obviously what we're here to do. And basically, it's just, I think it makes good business sense to sometimes take stock and reset and evaluate things to see where improvements can be made, especially in this key basic council service that we provide. So I think our constituents would expect that from us as elected representatives and as a basic service to them. So Thank you, Chair.
Thanks very much, Johnny. And hand over to yourself, Henry. You're going to second the motion. I'll make a comment to make as well. Thank you.
Yeah, I would like to second this motion, a very important motion. And especially so given that we are involved in looking at different types of vehicles and hydrogen and electric even. So there's massive changes coming down the road. And I think it's a very reasonable notice of motion to suggest that we really examine where we're going with this and to see where our failings and shortcomings are in issues like the bin collection service and see how we can improve them. And that's why I second in the motion, Chairman.
Thanks very much, Henry, for second a comment. Are members anything further to add? Members, let's just see who we've got. Go ahead, Willie. Go ahead. That's it. You're using Michael's microphone there.
Some of the one members then. That's the end of the chat. So. I suppose, first of all, we're totally opposed to the motion in its current form. Sinn Féin are opposed to the privatisation of council services. We support and show solidarity with the public sector workers who are out in all weather doing one of the most important jobs that we have in the district. When you talk about repairs, it is about bins. And I have to say, these guys work really hard and earn some of the lowest wages out there. So, you know, it's a bit, we're all aware of the, you know, the discussions and that we had with the unions and building up that relationship. I think this motion in its current format is toxic to that relationship moving forward. In regards to Miss Bins, it was caused by the vehicles. The vehicles weren't fit for purpose. They were breaking down all the time. We went through a major procurement exercise, and everybody in this committee, you know, should be aware, and people who were on the previous committee, you know, it was a long process because all the councils were looking at new vehicles. So we've managed to get vehicles, you know, onto the routes now, and that's improving the services. We also had the issue in regards to the trade unions, the workers seeking better terms of conditions and better workers' rights and better pay. And we worked, built on the relationship. At times it was very difficult, but we worked on the relationship and we came to a resolution of them difficulties. And there's other issues as we move on through the process and through the relationship with the trade unions that we really need to be mindful of. Something like this, I can tell you, to put the repair to the cost to carry out this analysis and then to kill it after we get the analysis, because Sinn Féin won't be supporting it. It's as simple as that in its current format. So I will make an amendment in regards to the motion. So, sir, I'll send it over to you. Remove the wording after commits to the full stop after the word providers. Then add the following wording after commits. Do you want me to send it over to you now, sir? Wrong one, sir. That's your bit now, sir. So the extra wording then, the amendment is after commits is to setting up a cleansing refuge and task force led by the chairperson of council to work with all department heads of service to ascertain what the problems are and to develop a framework to resolve them. And then, as I said, the wording after that is fine. So that's my amendment. I've sent it to Sir.
Do you have a seconder for the amendment? Councillor Rice has indicated that he's in the chat that he seconded, and we'll also put it typed into the meeting chat that the amendments in the chat. So, if members, I'll give members a wee minute or two to look at the amendment and then to digest, and then we'll proceed on with the debate.
Okay. Can you read out the amendment?
Yes, I've got those. I'm just going to ask members again. Councillor Jackson, are you happy to accept the amendment as tabled by Councillor Carr?
Need to hear it again.
That's on chat.
It's on your chat.
It's on here.
Is it in the chat, you said?
It's in the chat, in the meeting chat. Henry. Willie, just looking at the task force, will that be members of, I don't say neighbourhood services, but will the membership will be gone from this committee?
Yeah.
Happy enough.
I'll maybe talk to them.
I know, probably.
You can come back and maybe.
I will do that again.
We would be members of committee in every 40.
No problem. Thank you. All right, Councillor Jackson, thank you.
Chair, I just want to respond to Councillor Clark. I mean, I'm taking on board what he says there. Again, we didn't mention privatisation in the original motion, but the original motion was focused on trying to improve the service, really. That's what the focus was, you know. I'm taking on board what you're saying. I think we'll be willing to accept the amendment, yeah.
Yeah, happy enough. Yeah. Well, thanks very much, Councillor Jackson, for that. And if members are happy enough for that amendment that has been duly proposed and seconded and approved by the original submission. So if members are happy enough for that, Willie, do you want to respond to this?
Very comment. Or I wouldn't have took amendment to take it out. But in regards to the makeup, the legal officers and that, you know, but I would say at the chair of council, and then one from each party on this committee would take part.
No problem. Councillor Jackson, I'll let you wrap up.
Sorry, Chair, I had looking to speak on it just.
Go ahead, David.
Yeah. No, Chair, I was just going to say, I'm more than content with the amendment as well. Obviously, you know, Councillor Jackson, welcome the fact that he's accepted it. I don't think necessarily, whilst the motion wasn't proposing that we go towards privatisation, I'm not so sure that is the answer anyway, because I think there's issues even with accountability on a day-to-day basis whenever problems would be, you know, encountered. With a private company, at least, you know, whilst our service is far from perfect and there are difficulties, and this is why the motion has been brought forward to try and identify those problems. And listen, a lot of the problems are already known and there's work needs to be done to try and address that. And some of it is regarding purchase of vehicles and other issues, but that'll be all, you know, identified within the analysis that takes place. But, you know, at least we have that day-to-day contact with officials, at one point I would say, and I have raised this with you, Andrew, as you're well aware about the telephone system, it needs addressed. There are concerns about the general public constantly getting through the voice message on regular occasions and not really getting that opportunity to speak directly to people, and then obviously to come to ourselves. But listen, that's part of our role, and we're more than happy to do that. But there are issues that need to be looked at, and that's just one. But the overall analysis that would take place, I would hope, would identify the various issues that there are, and we can work then as a committee and any task force that's established to try and address those going forward. So I think the amended motion deals with that in a hopefully in an effective way. So more than happy to support it.
Thank you very much, Councillor Taylor. Councillor Jackson, summing up.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Just to sum up, as I say, the main thrust of the motion was to try and improve the services for people out there, which is a very key service that the council provides. And again, just trying to make it the best that it can be. I still don't accept Councillor Clark's overview. I mean, I wasn't advocating privatisation; it was more in way of comparison. That was the main argument going forward, you know. So, but look, I'm happy to accept the amendment. And hopefully we can improve the services it is. Thank you very much.
Good on, Johnny. Thanks. Thanks, members. And that's us now able to move on to agenda item number 6, and that's a report on a motion from Councillor Kelly in relation to animal welfare. So, I'll hand over to you who's going to lead the motion or speak for the motion.
Yes, I'm going to lead on this one. Councillor Kelly's not here today. First, I'd like to propose an amendment to the motion, which is the removal of the last sentence. So from this council also commits the removal of that complete sentence.
Are members happy enough with that last line being deleted? Could you repeat that again, Councillor Truesdale? Thank you.
So it's the removal of the last complete sentence, which begins, this council also commits to ensuring that.
That's possible. That's it, just that sentence, that this council also commits to ensuring that this should cut go ahead. That's what I have down here.
Yeah, it will commit the necessary budget to ensure its statutory responsibilities for animal welfare are met and those services are cut or curtailed. So it's the removal of the last three lines.
If members are happy enough for that, we'll proceed then. Councillor Tracy, if you want to read into your speech, please. Thanks.
Yeah. So, as it is, animal welfare enforcement across Northern Ireland is patchy at best, with many councils operating just a couple of staff across multiple districts. Withdrawal of this funding will result in council facing difficult decisions about service prioritisation. It's vital that councils do not simply roll over and accept these cuts, and I believe that this council to be currently proactive in the regard of not accepting this cut to the animal welfare budget. The current context for animal welfare in Northern Ireland is bleak. Rising dog attacks, mainly due to irresponsible owners and unethical breeding. Extremely poorly regulated puppy breeding. Increased dog abandonment due to cost of living, end of working from home. And concerns about high levels of dog euthanasia in the council. The case for a forum is that increased public interest in and declining standards of animal welfare make the case for councillors to be more involved and informed on what's happening within their districts. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Councillor Truesdale. Councillor Clark is in the chamber, and I know Councillor Enright on the chat has indicated he's going to second. So, Councillor Clark. Enright, and then Councillor Clark, sorry. Is there any further comments? Councillor Enright, do you want to make any comments as to the motion, what you're seconding?
Just happy to support Jill Truesdale, Chair.
Clear on. Thank you, Ben. I was going to ask a wee question. You know, I'm a very firm supporter of animal welfare issues, and I think I know the current situation from the department is unacceptable. However, the service it needs to be paid for, and if this motion states as a council, I just want to know precisely how we're going to fund this in absence of the department, and also. If money has to be found for this, what services are going to have to be sort of looked at to resource that? But I think I think there was a letter or something, and I think we need to look at the outcome of the legal process. I think it was the council sent letters, a pre-action protocol. So that's just some of the points that I raised. But no, I'm just. I'll hand over to the officers to reply to the points I've raised so far. And I know there are a couple of councillors have indicated that they want to speak, so they do. Andrew?
Chair's come back on a couple of points that you raised there. Yes, there has been this matter was raised through SOLAS, and each of the councils reported back, and we took a report back to the SPNR committee. Last month, which council agreed to the sending of a pre-action protocol letter from the chief executive of Fermanagh and OMA, who leads on animal welfare for SOLAS, the chief executive's forum. So that's with the department as we speak, and clearly we'll report back when we get a response to that. There is a timescale within that response is required to be made. As far as funding goes, I mean, this is an in-year budget cut, if you like. There's nobody suggested that we're stopping the service. Clearly, we'll have to. It's a pressure on next year's rates as well. So, if the cut is not rescinded, then this will have to be taken into consideration through the discussion at various committees and with the parties in terms of the setting of next year's rates, and this being another additional pressure on the council.
Thanks very much, Andrew. Councillor Clark and Councillor Reilly have indicated in the chat that they want to make a comment. So, well, there you go with yourself, Councillor Clark.
Thanks, Chair. While we're not opposed to a forum, you know, being set up, I think it'd be best, it's a bit like the previous motion, the best way to, on the outcome of the legal proceedings. Also, you know, the lack of the executive has created this issue, and, you know, that's what's causing these problems, you know, and there's obviously budgetary problems, civil servants are basically picking the low-hanging fruit, you know, and putting the burden on councils, which is unacceptable, because, you know, when this legislation was put in place, I was in the Assembly at the time, I worked on this legislation, and it was ring-fenced that DART said that they would cover the cost. Any cost that was cut wouldn't be burdened on the local ratepayer and wouldn't be burdened on local councils. And that was clear before the legislation passed its final stage, that commitment was given. So I have a confidence in any legal process that was given, that commitment, or it wouldn't have been agreed at the Assembly to do it. You know, so I think it's important we don't let DARA off the hook in regards to this. This is their responsibility. Their responsibility to budget for the welfare of animals. So I think we have to wait until that decision is made, and then, you know, look towards setting up the forum.
Thanks very much, Councillor Clark. Councillor Reilly.
Yes, Chairman. It's a really important notice of motion. Animal welfare. I think society can only be judged on how you treat your animals. And one issue that has been pointed out to me several times, in England, Scotland and Wales, the RSPCA are far more proactive and involved with concerns in animal welfare issues. Whereas over here we got the USPCA, and it seems to be virtually non-existent at the minute as far as I can see. But I would be very interested in finding out the resources that the USPCA has, and could we liaise with them and develop a service similar to what happens in GB. But again, I don't think Henry Reilly's talking through his hat, but I was a veterinary inspector in the Department of Agriculture and used to go around many, many places, meat plants, and we would do the licensing for dog. You know, somebody wanted to have a where you leave dogs for, if you're on a holiday or something, we would do all the licensing on those. And sometimes you would find some pretty nasty situations, and they were always acted upon. And that was just part of your normal duties as a Department of Agriculture Veterinary Service inspector. And I can't understand why DARA would want to make those cuts. This doesn't add up. It's nonsensical, because it wasn't your primary role. It was a subsidiary role, but an important role that people could do no problem. It didn't cost the taxpayers a load of money. So I can't understand why they're doing it. But I support the motion in principle.
Thanks very much, Councillor Reilly. And since no further indications in the chamber or online for members to speak further. Sorry, go ahead.
In regards to deferring the decision until after the outcome, you know, of the judicial process, and does that require an amendment?
Would that be classed as proposals? No problem. Can I make that amendment that proposed by Councillor Clark and seconder, please? Seconder, Councillor Rice. Councillor Truesdale, are you happy enough to accept the amendment that has been tabled by Councillor Clark in relation to deferral of the motion until the legal process that's currently going on being completed? Would you be happy enough for that?
Yes, sir. Yep.
Thank you very much, Councillor Truesdale, for accepting the amendment. So the amendment is carried unanimously. So thank you very much, members. That was, again, another very good debate this evening, and for the contributions, very much appreciated. So thank you very much, everyone. So we'll move on now to a wee presentation that we have. It's a food safety, food and water sampling programme. I think you've raised issues with that previously. So Sinead's going to give us a wee presentation on the food and water sampling programme. So Sinead, it's over to yourself. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Chair. So the presentation is going to give an overview of the food service within the council. We're going to look briefly at food policy in Northern Ireland and then have an overview of the different types of sampling that is undertaken by the Environmental Health Department. So you'll see that in Uri Mourne and Down District Council, there are more than 2,400 food premises that are registered or approved by the Environmental Health Food Safety Team. Within this profile, we have some specialist premises that require specialist expertise and additional time due to the nature of the foods that are produced or the vulnerability of the consumers. This includes 194 manufacturers, and we also have 4 hospitals within the district and 57 residential and nursing homes. We are in a unique position within our council area that we have 63 EC-approved premises. This is the highest number of approved premises in Northern Ireland and the highest number of premises approved for handling fish and shellfish. This is constantly changing as the process is changing very according to quotas and availability of fish and shellfish. And again, this puts demands on the service to provide support and advice to this industry and the support that's associated with new changing and updating EC approvals. Oh. I hit the wrong button there. Give me a sec. Okay, so within the food safety team, we have a number of district environment health officers, technical officer. We have 2 senior environment health officers, one that looks after mainly food safety and the other that looks after imported and exported food and EC approvals, and they report through to the head of environment health commercial. So in Northern Ireland, the responsibility for the enforcement of food safety it rests with the Food Safety Authority, Food Standards Agency, NI, as a central competent authority, and 11 district councils are each competent authorities in their own right. You'll see the list of some of the primary legislation that governs food control, including food sampling. And the food policy guides the development of sampling programmes, and that's as part of the Uri Mourne and Down District Council Food Service Plan. This was approved by the Active and Healthy Community Committee in June 2023. There are a number of aims and objectives within food policy, and that's to protect the consumer through the enforcement of food hygiene and food standards legislation, verify the effectiveness of a food business's food safety management system, and that looks at things like temperature control, food handling and processing practices. There's also a role in relation to giving advice and guidance, assessing the quality of the food that's manufactured, distributed or retailed within the council area, and ensuring any food that's imported complies with the relevant food legislation, as well as ensuring that consumers are given sufficient information to make informed choices, detect fraudulent activities, and ensure a consistent and proportionate follow-up action is taken upon receiving sampling results, and that's in line with the council's enforcement policy. So in terms of the types of food and water sampling that's undertaken, it's broken down into two categories, and that's microbiological sampling and chemical sampling. And sampling is either planned sampling, which is where the sampling officers work off a set plan in relation to what food or water samples are taken. There's reactive sampling that may be as a result of a food complaint received, alleged or confirmed food poisoning, complaints about the standards of the premises. And then there's also surveys, and the surveys can be done on a Northern Ireland or UK basis, and they look at specific types of food. So within the council, microbiological sampling occurs weekly, and there's approximately 680 samples taken a year. The samples include food and water from food premises, but also sometimes swabs of food contact surfaces. On request, officers will also take samples from private domestic drinking water supplies, and water samples are also taken from recreational water, such as the council pool and spa facilities, and they're also taken in private pools. The department also facilitates fortnightly recreational water samples that are taken between April and September each year, and this is on behalf of ART for areas that the council have responsibility where there are high levels of water sport activities, for example Sandy Bottom and Warm Point or Camilla Lake. Observations are made at the time of sampling to look at other risks and concerns such as algae blooms. Samples are analysed at the Northern Ireland Public Health Laboratories at Belfast City Hospital. So when the samples are analysed, results are determined in line with relevant legislation and guidance, and the samples come back to us categorised as either satisfactory, borderline, unsatisfactory or potentially injurious to health. And you can see from the samples that have been taken so far this year, 337 samples have been taken and 30 of those have been returned as unsatisfactory. So this is followed up by the officers, and every sample taken, the food business operators are provided with written notification of the sample results and information on to help them actually understand the results. The samples look at different bacteria, common bacteria that you probably would have heard of, like Salmonella and Listeria, and depending on whether they're present or not, will indicate where the sample will fall. So where a sample is unsatisfactory, follow-up action is taken, further investigation advice, and a re-sample will be taken if necessary. So in terms of chemical sampling, the chemical sampling programme is developed taking into account the food service plan and in line with the Northern Ireland Food Managers Group chemical sampling plan. So it's intelligence-led, and it looks at emerging trends, and the public analyst sits on that group and provides their expert opinion, which can help guide where the samples are taken and what type of samples are taken and what they're tested for. So the number of samples that are taken is determined on a ratio based on the population, and currently about 130 samples are taken per year for chemical analysis. They're taken from five main categories of premises, which are the EC food premises that I'd already mentioned, manufacturers, butchers, and sometimes some premises that are outside of the sample programme due to complaints, for example. Priority samples are identified, and surveys are also undertaken in line with the priority areas. So routinely, samples are taken and tested for undeclared allergens, meat content, additives, pesticides, speciation, and labelling compliance. We did have a discussion around pesticides and previous samples of local produce that have been tested for pesticides have been compliant, and the guidance from the public analyst is that issues have been linked mainly with some imported foods, and I'll speak to that in a moment. If we were to look at the pesticides sampling locally, we would look at taking the 10 samples of local produce at approximately £220 per sample, and we would need a considered budget provision for that. So, again, like the microbiological samples, results are provided, and the main issues that we find are around labelling issues, undeclared allergens found in products, and some additives that are found above the legal limit. Specific legislation, as highlighted there, came in to effect since the 1st of January 2023, and that lays out requirements to monitor specific foods for particular contaminants. And you can see there, across Northern Ireland, the guidance said that at least 100 samples need to be taken per year for heavy metals, for example, in cut vegetables like apples, potatoes and carrots, acrylamide in potato crisps, soft bread and breakfast cereals, and then mycotoxins. There's two different categories there that are generally associated with those specific foods. So they would be reflected in the council sampling plan. And the results of that will go be published in future reports. Since the horsemeat scandal in 2013, Europol and Interpol have led initiatives against fake and illicit food worldwide, and that's known as Operation Opsin. We're currently on Operation Opsin 12, and a survey of meat speciation and undeclared allergens within meat takeaway meals took place between the 1st of December 22 and the 31st of January 23. Now you can see there from 63 samples that were taken, sampled from our local takeaways, 37 of them come back with presence of milk. So the officers would have gone in and asked for those products without milk, and then the analysis would be done after that. And the speciation one then, so that's where we ask for specific meat and it's tested to see if there are any other species present. And we did get one unsatisfactory result in that one. However, there was language barrier issues and there was a misunderstanding in terms of the food business operator and what they were asked. So that one was followed up with and dealt with the food business operator. So in relation to the outcome of this survey, there are plans in place to work with food businesses to increase awareness around providing allergen-free foods and making sure that the necessary controls are in place. And there's a plan to bring together the relevant businesses in the area to provide seminars in relation to allergen controls in their premises. The environmental health team also takes samples of shellfish and wild fish sampling, and that's done on behalf of the Food Standards Agency. So oysters, mussels and water samples are taken from Dundrum and Killock, and they're tested for specific toxins, and the quality of the water is also tested. The samples assist with determining the classification of the shellfish beds, and if there's any contamination found, there's restrictions then in the use of the beds and the shellfish that can be harvested. We're into our second year then of the wild fish survey, and we have submitted 60 samples so far to the lab of fish, crab and prawns for heavy metals, PCBs and dioxins. And this is for fish that are caught off the coastline and landed at our two harbours in Kilkeel and Ardglass. So far this year, we've submitted 30 samples out of the 60, and they've all returned as satisfactory. So in terms of imported food samples, imported food checks are being carried out one point port since the 1st of January 2021. And that EU legislation requires that certain foods that are imported from outside of the UK and the EU are checked for known contaminants. So an example, and so this is one where we've had three samples that have tested positive of basmati rice from India for pesticides. In addition to that, under international health regulations, water samples are taken from ships, and that's linked to the ship sanitation checks that are also carried out. The requirement is that ships would have a satisfactory water sample taken every 6 months. Sorry, I'm going to just make a correction. The pesticide residues, three samples have all come back as satisfactory. Just to finish off with private water supplies, private water supplies, where they are classified as a private water supply by the Drinking Water Inspectorate, the council carry out risk assessments and samples on behalf of DWI, and that's looking at both microbiological and chemical criteria. Currently we have 11 private water supplies registered within the council area, and these are associated with food manufacturing premises, bottled water and hospitality premises. And as I previously mentioned, individual residents can also have microbiological tests of their water supply taken by the department. So just to conclude, I hope to say that the food sampling can make a very valuable contribution when it's targeted and risk-based to ensure compliance with legal requirements and to ensure that the citizens of the council and those further afield have access to safe food. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah. Thank you very much for a very intensive and comprehensive presentation this evening. And that's a lot of stuff I find quite interesting and I've learned from. So I'm going to hand over to Councillor Truesdale for a comment. Jill, go ahead. Thank you.
Apologies, Chair. I should have put a Q instead of a C, if it's okay to ask a question.
No problem. Jill, you're welcome. Work away. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that presentation. It was really interesting. Can I just ask on the microbiological sampling of water in recreational areas such as Sandy Bottom and Castlewellan? You showed a simple sort of breakdown of good, unsatisfactory, etc. on a chart. Is there also a breakdown of the bacteria or bloom type drivers in the water? And do council follow the thresholds set by WHO, as DERA do, for bathing water?
Yes, thank you, Chair. I just want to make sure I'm quoting the right guidance. So, yes, Councillor Truesdale, so the samples are taken and they're tested for coliforms and E. coli, and they're assessed against the bathing water regulations, the bathing water directive. Now, in relation to algae blooms, when the samples are taken, there's a visual assessment made of the recreational water to pick up on things like is there dog fouling incidents in the area, are there any other contaminants in the area, and a visual assessment of any algae bloom. And what we would do and have done in the past is we've put up notices to the public to let them know that there's a risk from bathing in the waters.
Thanks very much, Shane. Hopefully, Jill, that reply will answer your wee query. Councillor Riley, Henry.
Chairman, I would like to thank you very much for that report. It's really, really good on the detail on it. That thing about milk, would that be in relation to people who are lactose intolerant and want food with no milk product? And it was over 50% of them failed. That's incredible. Especially the young children, whatever, that were lactose intolerant. So, but Chairman, people say sometimes, what is our rates money spent on? The public need to know that this type of work's been done and the professionalism of the people that we have doing it, you know, that's really reassuring. It should be really reassuring for the community. If we can get, you know, information out like that to the public, I guarantee you, there's nobody or very few people, a tiny percent of the population in Uri, Mourne and Down, know that this really important work's been done on their behalf. And I think it's great to see what you're doing there. And thank you very, very much for that report.
Then on, Councillor Riley, thank you very much. And again, Sinead, I'd like to thank you for especially for the time you've took out to bring together such a very comprehensive report and stuff I've learned, you know, that I wasn't aware of. And it just shows you what goes on behind the scenes that members of the public aren't aware of. So thanks to all concerned. Our next item is agenda item number 8, which is to seek 2 nominations from members of the Sustainability and Environment Committee to be appointed to work with Mineways New Vision. I have already received a nomination from Councillor Finn. Are there any other nominations? Councillor Clark?
Chair, can I propose Councillor Kate Murphy? Just to say, the role being the conduit between the residents and Mineways is a very important role. And, you know, a very rewarding role. I did it for a number of years in Down Council, and the old council, and found it, you know, a great insight to the work of Mineways. So it'll be enjoyable for everyone who takes the role.
Thank you very much. Is there a seconder? It's actually 2, but from separate parties. I know Councillor Derry Finn from the SDLP is expressing interest for the nomination. I'm happy to support her nomination. If that's happy enough, so. But if members are happy enough with the nominations that proposed by Councillor Clark of Councillor Kate Murphy and Councillor Finn, could I have a seconder? Councillor Michael Rice is in the chat as well. So, again, I'll hand over to you, Sinead, to speak in that report. Thank you.
If members are happy enough, and we can move on.
No problem. And happy enough for the nominations that have been forward. No other nominations present. And again, I've always had a passion. I'm a firm supporter of mental health, and you know, and any efforts to make to work with various organisations, and especially in the times that we're in. So again, Mineways is a very good organisation as well as amongst many others. So I wish our two members and two representatives all the best as they take on the ambassador or champion for our council. Thank you very much. Going into committee on agenda items number 9, which is examined under paragraph 3, part 1 of the schedule 6 of the Local Government Act Northern Ireland 2024. So, could I have a proposer to go into committee, please? Could I have a seconder to go into closed session? Councillor Finn, thank you very much. So, our first business paper. I'll just go ahead with the jargon that I have to read out. The following items were taken in closed session, and item number 9 was the business case for annual servicing and maintenance of lifts in council buildings. On the proposal of Councillor Riley, signed by Councillor Clark, it was agreed to note the content of the report and associated business case. It was also agreed to accept the conclusion of the business case that option 4 is chosen as preferred option. Option 4 will see the appointment through a tender process of a competent contractor to service, maintain and complete safety checks on all 32 lifts in the council asset register, together with updating all auto dialers to GSM SIM card units. Agenda item number 10, was the procurement of hire vehicles. On the proposal of Councillor Clark, seconded by Councillor Larkin, the following was approved. The business case to procure a contract for vehicle hire services in Appendix 1, and the award of single tender action for vehicle hire services to current suppliers as outlined in Section 2.3 of the officer's report.
Item number 11, that was the procurement of engine oils and lubricants. On the proposal of Councillor Rice, seconded by Councillor Finn, it was agreed to approve the business case to procure motor oils and lubricants as an Appendix 1 of the officer's report. Agenda item number 12, the procurement of contracts for household recycling centre waste streams. On the proposal of Councillor Clark, seconded by Councillor Truesdale, it was agreed to approve the following. The economic appraisal for the procurement of a contract to collect, receipt, treat and process residual waste, including large domestic items from Downpatrick, Castlewell and the Ballinahinch HRC sites, and large domestic items collected from the curbside bulky collections in the Downpatrick area in Appendix 1 of the officer's report. The business case for the procurement of a contract to collect, receipt, treat and process paper, cardboard and hard plastic materials at all council HRC sites. Item number 13, procurement of deep cleansing services. On the proposal of Councillor Clark, seconded by Councillor Kate Murphy, it was agreed to procure the deep cleansing services as outlined in Appendix 1 of the officer's report. And for noting, the following items are deemed to be exempt under paragraph 3 of part 1 of the Schedule 6 of the Local Government Act, Northern Ireland 2014. Item 14, Art 21, Joint Committee Members, Monthly Bulletin and Minutes of the 28th of September 23. On the proposal of Councillor Clark and seconded by Councillor Larkin, I was agreed to note the bulletin, and that's the in committee items dispensed with. And then we're moving on to agenda items number 15 to 20 for noting. But Councillor Enright had indicated in question 15 for paper 15. So, and I see Councillor Truesdale has a question on 16. So I'll go over to Councillor Enright first, first question, then Councillor Truesdale. Nick Logan.
Well, thanks, Chair. It's about time we actually had this consultation from NIE. There's a few areas where we've left out comments in our response. Can you hear me, Chairperson?
I can hear you loud and clear, Cadogan.
And just coming to item one, where we don't have a response, and it's the impact of microgrids in our area. There's a severe business impact on not having microgrids in our area. Several councillors there will know that the fishing industry has a lot of big industrial fridges in our area, and they've been unable to connect to the grid to get PV panels on their roofs. I'll give you an example of Milligan's fish factory in Ardglass, who have Ireland's biggest industrial fridge. They've been refused connectivity to the grid for PV panels, and they're not allowed to have a microgrid for their half acre worth of roof connecting down to their industrial fridge beneath to store the energy. So, I mean, I could give Brian some words here, but it's a huge impact on energy hungry businesses where they're not allowed either connectivity or a microgrid to reduce their costs in our area, Chair. Just picking up on questions 2 through 8, I think NIE are being a bit self-serving here. Basically, we need to rephrase our comments in questions 2 to 8 to reflect the fact that that Northern Ireland is the only part of these islands that doesn't have socialisation of the grid, and that the impact on this is very severe on our businesses and indeed on EV charging companies. I think you all recall in recent times where in Belfast, instead of an EV charging infrastructure company paying £2,000 to £3,000 to connect half a dozen charging points to the grid, they were being charged £250,000 to do what would cost £2,000 to £3,000 in England, Scotland, Wales or the Republic because of the lack of socialisation. And I know that Councillor Clark was with me at one stage when we met farmers with Chris Hazard at one stage when he was an MLA, where they were being presented with bills of £180,000 to connect wind turbines to the grid because of a lack of socialisation for the various businesses, including dairying, including the manufacture of haylage for export, and issues like that. I can give specific examples to Brian Rankin if he would like to get them. Question 9, he's made no comment. I mean, in my view, RP6 is basically the regime where that controls how NIE can charge for its services on the grid. In my view, RP6 is very much a matter for the regulator. But RP7 is a big issue for us because it consists of the investment plan for the grid expansion across Northern Ireland. And Newry Moreland Down is not on the investment plan at the moment. Now, I've just in the comment line sent you all a picture of the grid. And if you examine it carefully, you'll see how the 110 kilovolt lines come nowhere near Newry Moreland Down. They're red. And how the 30 kilovolt lines end just 5 miles north of Newry. And in Ballinahinch, and essentially our entire district doesn't have a proper national grid. So I'm suggesting that we should be saying in question 9 that the investment plan for Northern Ireland needs to include our area from Strangford across to Newry in the same way it is taken in Antrim, Derry, Fermanagh, Tyrone and the other counties in Northern Ireland. Moving on to point 10, they're talking about making grid services and grid provision developer-led. Chair, we all know that the average consumer in Northern Ireland is going to have to, by 2030 to 2050, have their heat, their power, and their transport provided by the grid. So clearly, socialisation is the only way we're going to make that happen, and realistically speaking. So I would like to amend the response there and say that it should not be developer-led, except where it's a major wind project or a major energy storage project, where it's a very large development that can clearly afford its own grid connection. Moving on to point 12 here, we're talking about...
I'm sorry for cutting across here. This paper is for noting. And I do take on board a lot of your valid points.
I'm nearly finished here.
Well, I know, but the fact I'm not cutting you off or anything, but no, this is for noting, and if you've had any concerns, you could have said that to Brian. I think what would do your proposals or do your queries justice, Cadogan, if you outline what you've told us so far and the rest of your points, and the officers, Andrew and Brian, they can take them on board, and if they speak it back to you, and and then harmonise whatever queries and issues that you have, and they could be fed back to the persons responsible for who this paper was sent to in the first place. If you're happy enough with that.
Well, yes, but there are a few issues that I've heard other councillors. I mean, number 12, for instance. There's a large amount of renewable energy that doesn't need planning permission, and that's likely to increase. So to make planning a prerequisite for connectivity would be a terrible mistake. You know, I mean, there's lots of stuff like this all the way through. I've only got 3 other points, actually, Chair, but I could meet up with Brian separately and go through these points. Now, I apologise for the detail of it, but I do have worked in the industry for about 30 or 40 years, and I'm aware of how badly served Newry Moreland Down is from the national grid.
But what I suggest, what you can do is, if you do forward your points that you've raised tonight and send them directly to Andrew and also to Brian for them to act upon, and if need speak it back to you to touch base and to see what measures can be taken to move it forward. Cadogan, I'm not being ignorant or anything. I hope you don't think that, but just this is a noting item here and. And just to say, I've given you a lot of leeway on such a subject that knows close to your heart, but I do hope that you take on board. And
what is the future of our area, Chair? I mean, this projected is going to be £200 million worth of rates to be collected on renewable energy. We want some of it, Chair.
I understand, and hopefully through your efforts and with others on board, we can get that. Thank you. I have a proposer and seconder for that paper, please.
Sorry. As modified, Chair.
That's no problem. Councillor Truesdale, you wanted in on 16. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I'll be quicker. Response to the consultation on carbon budgets from DERA and the response that the council gave, and it also relates to the development of the sustainability and climate change strategy that all DEAs were given last week, maybe the week before. So I just wanted to ask Andrew, and he doesn't have to answer now. I'm quite happy to take it in an email or whatever. I just wanted to ask if the council is future-proofing itself by examining the benefits of ocean carbon sequestration, given we are an island, and also the economic and possible agricultural gains from aquaculture, specifically seaweed farms. There's much research has been carried out already, a lot done by Queen's and the west coast of Ireland. So those are two areas that I'd like to know. Are we, as a council, looking at those? Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Charlie. Okay, Andrew wants to come back to you there. No, sorry, Chair, just to say that I'll take the councillor up on her offer and I'll come back to her outside of the meeting.
Thank you very much. Grand.
Hope that's helpful, Jill. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you.
So the rest of the items on the agenda are for noting. And just could I have a proposer and seconder for those agenda items that I've mentioned to you? Just to give you a clarification, Cadogan, that's already been submitted and it can be changed, just to reassure you. And say, if you touch base with Andrew and Ms. Brian with what you've raised, they'll be able to forward your views onto the consultee body. So, Councillor Kate Murphy has proposed and Councillor Jill Truesdale has seconded the items that have been the last lot of items in on the agenda this evening. And I'd like to thank you all for it was a very long meeting this evening and a very good one. A lot of views and a lot of debate went on. And thanks to those online for joining in as well. And to those in the chamber, safe home and have a good night. Bye.
Sure.